My car has race gas for breakfast. Hi, I'm Paul Thaler.
I'm Brian Libby.
And today we're going to be talking about basically the octane rating on gasoline and why it's one of the most misunderstood things in, automotive technology there is.
Yeah, it is very misunderstood, even by me. I haven't really understood it until just recently. So, Paul, why don't you explain it?
So, let me just ask you a question, Brian.
What's up?
If I gave you a gallon of regular unleaded and I gave you a gallon of premium unleaded, which one would you say actually had more power in it?
I would say that premium has more power in it.
Okay, what if I told you that was false?
You would have to explain it to me because it doesn't make sense to me.
Okay, well, you're about to get learned, son.
Oh, no.
So, basically, gasoline has a certain amount of BTUs per gallon. It's like, 125,000, let's just say. I'm not 100% sure on that off the top of my head.
Okay.
That is what is contained in gasoline. Is there a slight difference between regular and premium? Probably a little bit. Not much, though. I mean, mm-hmm. It's a form of stored energy, essentially. Picture it like a battery.
Okay.
All right. Octane is solely the fuel's resistance to burning.
Right.
In other words, a higher octane fuel is actually less likely to burn than a lower octane fuel.
Okay.
The amount of energy in regular and premium is pretty much exactly the same.
All premium, if anybody doesn't know, all premium fuel is a blend of regular octane,
with higher octane, essentially.
Yes, it's just a half-half mix, essentially. Yeah.
So, basically, all octane is doing is it's resisting combustion. And this kind of plays a role with timing as well in engine control systems. So, basically, what happens is you have this system called timing on a car. And what timing is in a perfect world, you would ignite the air-fuel mixture in your car at the second the piston was at the top of its stroke so that the fuel would combust and then force it back down. In the real world, that's not how it works, because everything takes a ever so slight amount of time, however minuscule it is, even though it seems instantaneous, it makes a difference when you have something moving back and forth, you know, a couple hundred times a minute at least.
Now let's just take a second to remember, me and Paul set up a MSD box on said 67 Firebird built motor.
Yeah.
So we finished installing MSD box, and this MSD box is an MSD ignition box, obviously controls
timing,
whatnot.
Multiple spark discharge, essentially.
Yeah.
Is what MSD stands for.
So we started the car, and let's just say the timing was way out of whack.
Timing is one of those things that, like, you won't notice when it's close, but you'll hear it when it's wrong.
And this was wrong.
It was very,
This car fired like right off.
And
it was just vroom, vroom,
yeah.
Vroom.
Yeah, it was one of those things where you would just go, no, that's not right.
It sounded cool.
It sounded very cool, but no, it was not right at all.
Not at all.
But essentially, using timing, what it's doing is it's allowing you to sort of preempt combustion, if you will. Having the spark go off a few degrees before the piston reaches the top of its stroke allows everything to start burning. That way, when the piston hits the top of its stroke, the sort of flame that started is compressed, and it gives it the ability to sort of ignite that fuel with more energy and force it down. Essentially, what you're doing is preempting it so that it pushes off with the most power. It's kind of like how when you're jumping on a trampoline, right, Bri?
Yeah.
When you jump up and down and there's other people jumping, if you're jumping out of sync with them, you kind of just move up and down like you were jumping on the ground.
Exactly.
However, if you sign into when you're on sync with them, you can get significantly more air from the same amount of power.
Yeah, because it's using
Picture timing like that. You're using the energy from them releasing to help push you up as well.
Yes, being said, other pistons in that.
Well, it's not even so much the other pistons. It's just you're using sort of the preempting the spark and starting the flame is sort of like the person jumping aside you when you're about to jump.
Right.
And then you jumping is the gas combusting as the piston reaches top dead center, so that you're getting the most out of your energy input, if you will. And that's basically what having timing set up like that is doing. It's allowing you to extract the most amount of energy from it. Mm-hmm. However, you run into issues where you reach a point where octane requirements cause combustion too early and you get pinging or detonation, which is when it ignites, and it ignites too fast or too early, and the piston has to fight itself going up.
Mm-hmm.
And that's where having a higher octane helps, because now you can do it even earlier and it'll burn even slower until you get that air fuel mixture compressed, because when you have it all sort of compacted together, it wants to be more explosive. It makes everything easier to jump apart, but it also, you're putting more energy in and you're going to get more energy out to do it. And at the same time, you also need more spark energy. You know, air isn't necessarily conductive, right, Bri?
No.
Air with a little bit of gas in it might be slightly more conductive than just straight up air.
Yeah.
When you compress that, now it's significantly less conductive. And because of that, that spark might only ignite a couple of the atoms around the spark plug. Mm-hmm. Doing it early when everything's spread out, it's going to make it a lot easier for everything to sort of jump to each other because there's more room to expand.
Yeah.
When you're compressed really tight, like if you put like 10 people in a closet, they're going to be very uncomfortable and they're going to be pushing out and wanting to go out. Mm-hmm. That's what's happening at your ideal compression. Everything's all pushed together and it just wants to go apart as fast as possible and get as far apart as from each other as they can.
Yeah.
Now, no process is perfect, which I kind of hinted on earlier. When you get to that point, having higher octane helps.
Mm-hmm.
But on a everyday vehicle, it's not something that you necessarily need.
It's not efficient enough.
Well, you'll get something out of it. Don't get me wrong. You'll get a little bit more. Like, but is it worth it?
It's not for what it's worth.
I'd really like to get into explaining ignition systems, but I think that's something that we can do in another episode.
Yeah, definitely.
So, but in its simplest form, the ignition system consists of a coil, which takes low voltage from the car battery, 12 volts, and it'll up it to a few thousand volts. A lightning bolt is something that can, you know, make air conductive. And a coil on a car's ignition system is doing essentially the same thing. It's making the air conductive by giving it enough power behind it. You know, if you put enough power behind anything, I'm pretty sure you can make it conductive to an extent, as long as there's something for it to jump off of.
Yeah.
I'm not 100% sure on this, but I don't think you can make a perfect vacuum conductive.
No.
I could be wrong on that, though. I don't know. I don't have the ability to work with a perfect vacuum. But yeah, so basically, once your coil hits, that charge then travels through a wire and it goes to a distributor, or in some cars, it's just a coil pack and then it goes to each individual spark plug.
Depending on your...
Yeah. Just picture a distributor like a pizza pie, and the crust is the... Okay, well, picture it like a pizza pie, but take the center of the pies where the points are and flip them out so that each one of those 8 points is the outside of the circle. Now picture this wheel going around from the inside, and it's the same length as those points.
And it's touching them.
Almost touching them.
Almost. Enough to make an arc.
Enough to make a small arc, yes. And basically, that's what a distributor's doing. When it hits each one of those points, it ignites. And the way a distributor works is you can rotate that pizza pie independently of that other rotating wheel with the point on it. And by doing that, you can change the amount of degrees before or after where that point is. And that point is symbolizing of basically top dead center on some cylinder. Approximately. You know, that's not actually how it is. That's actually just driven by a gear and it spins around.
Right.
You know, you could over-rotate a distributor and all of a sudden you're firing number two when number one's at top dead center, you know?
Yeah, it's just completely inefficient.
But basically, what you do is you sort of preempt it. So if it's if that point is rotating clockwise, you would turn the distributor a couple of degrees counterclockwise. So now instead of it being 0 and 0 when it touches, it's like 3 degrees before where zero is, and now it does it. So that would be 3 degrees before top dead center. That would be advanced timing. And then the other way would be retarded timing, which it's called retarded just because it's retarded.
Going back.
It's going backwards, essentially. You're bringing it back.
Advancing forward, retarding back.
Yes. And essentially, what this allows for is you to control it. On electronic ignitions, which don't have a distributor and just have coils controlling the spark, the computer just tells it when to fire.
Yeah.
But now, when it hits that point, it goes through the spark plug wire into the spark plug. All of that takes a slight amount of time, which I was kind of hinting into earlier. And that's part of the reason why you advance. Once you set your timing light sort of accounts for that delay, in a sense, which, you know, makes a difference. But the real thing that you're setting the timing for is that ignition before top dead center because of the time it takes for that gas to expand and combust, essentially. Having more timing allows for a more efficient burn, as I had said, and having a higher octane allows you to slow that burn down and burn even more of it more efficiently, which will result in something like, you know, a little bit more fuel economy. Now, the thing is, though, Bri.
Yeah.
Do you buy Super just for the fuel economy?
In my dad's Equinox?
Yeah. Let's just say that.
In my dad's Equinox? Yeah, we would.
Okay.
In my Trans Am GTA with the tune port injection that we were talking about in previous episodes?
That's
no,
a requirement.
No, I would not. That would,
It's a requirement, essentially.
That's a requirement. That engine would ping without...
Yeah, pre-ignite.
Super. Yes.
And basically, when engineers design motors, they take into account all driving conditions. When you make a car run on 87, you're leaving a little bit of that efficiency on the table. Yes, that's just the way it is. A race car, or let's just say like a Corvette, a Camaro, a Porsche, a Lambo, those are all designed to run on the high-grade gasoline because they don't want to leave anything on the table.
No.
They want the most power they can get out of it. Yep. But your Toyota Camry, your Honda Accord, your...
Anything for the
Chevrolet
general consumer.
Malibu.
You know, like anything for the general consumer. Nothing sporty, nothing too...
A regular everyday driver is optimized to run under all conditions on regular unleaded gasoline. Will you see a slight improvement going to the Super? Yes, because there's a little bit left on the table. The computer is able to compensate for that, essentially.
Correct.
To conclude, octane's misunderstood, yes. Because a lot of people think it's associated with power. It's not. It's just associated to the resistance to burn. Slowing down and controlling the burn allows you to get more efficiency out of a motor. Higher octane, more efficiency. However, adding octane to gasoline also makes the gasoline more expensive. That's why you have cars that want to run on regular unleaded. High-performance cars, yes, you can put Super in them because those aren't the cars that you're driving every day.
Well.
Don't start me, Brian. Don't start me.
All right.
Overall, octane isn't energy. It's resistance to burning.
But properly tuned, properly built, it's good.
Yes, you can run a car. You can run anything on anything. It's just how much are you willing to sacrifice?
Yeah.
In life, it's a give and take, and it's just a matter of how much you want to give for what you're going
to
take.
You happen to go to the store, get a bottle of grain alcohol, going home, you know, car runs out of gas.
It'll work.
Yeah.
It'll work.
You might ruin a fuel pump.
For a little while.
Yeah, you might ruin a fuel pump.
It might be very lean.
Yeah.
You know,
depending
there might
on
be
what kind of
not enough fuel
on.
In the combustion chamber, and that's another thing. Air-fuel ratio is very important. Too much gas, it's rich. Too little gas, it's lean, and then it also wants to ignite too early.
Yeah.
Too much gas, and you just can't get it to go off.
Exactly.
Believe it or not, if you took a match and you threw it in a jug of gasoline, the match would go out.
Yeah. You'd have to hold it up to...
There's very, very specific conditions that need to be met for gasoline to work.
Yeah.
For anything to work.
Unless you're like me and just, you know...
Well, yeah.
Light it on fire, and it works.
Exactly.
I'm not kidding. 10-foot flame.
Yeah,
I singed my arm hairs off once. My arm was completely in a fire. It didn't hurt.
Was it warm outside?
It didn't hurt, but... What?
Was it warm outside?
No, it was in November of 2016, actually.
That's actually very interesting, then. All right. Well, without diverging too much further, if you need it, you need it. If you don't, you don't. It's all about give and take.
If you want to have fun, have fun. If,
yeah,
you know,
exactly.
You're an everyday Joe with a Toyota Camry. Hey, use regular.
Anything will work.
Yeah.
Anything will work. I'm Paul Thaler.
I'm Brian Libby.
Have a nice day.